Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
You're listening to All About Healing. I'm your host, Emily Francis, and we have the fabulous producer, Jay, on the line with us. I never want to start a show without thanking Jay because he is what makes this show happen. So I want to always make sure that even if you guys don't hear him, he is the one that is rocking this thing. All right. I am seeing a lot of videos and things back home where a lot of people are really angry and getting very divided by the day. And I have to tell you, as watching from far away, I am so grateful not to be in the thick of it, to be honest. It's not a place right now that I would want to be, and it makes me sad to see how angry everybody is being. And the hard part for me watching is that everybody has the same argument, that both sides aren't listening to the other, people aren't being very smart, people don't do good research. You know, wherever you stand, that is not what I'm here to talk about, because I do believe in freedom of choice on all the different things. That's with the things that are happening with women's bodies, the things that are happening with choosing or not to inoculate. It comes down to your ability to do proper research, and you make your own decisions for your body. So in my conversation about this, I'm not coming in with an opinion. My opinion is that people are being nasty and mean, and that I don't understand why we have to. I also don't understand why everybody has to tell their business all the time. And I've gotten that's a learning thing lately for me, is I'm just simply not offering my information because you don't actually need to know. So there's something there. There's something that back in the day before social media, we left politics and health information to the doctors and to the to the voting polls, and we didn't really talk about it so much. So I'm opening this up because I feel like it's getting really heated over there. So as we begin this particular episode, I want to have some of that in our minds as we come in, because I do think that rearranging of the way that we handle life on the outside is important, and it's an important reminder. And I didn't come into the show wanting to talk about it, but it came up strong. So today's guest is one of my favorite people. You know, I talk about that in-person conversations are always the best, but there are people that I've met in my life that I haven't gotten to meet in person that I just love dearly, and Glenn Birkenkamp is one of them. He's now, this is his third time being on the show, with reason, and it's because I love his message, his energy, who he is as a human being, the part he plays in the tapestry of the world around us, and I feel like today in this show, we need that energy because he is there in the Redwoods over there on the West Coast, and I think we could all benefit from some wisdom from Glenn Birkenkamp. So we're going to talk. He's got three different books out, but I want to start with the book Mastery, Living the Highest You. This is exactly what I'm talking about, so welcome to the show, Glenn. I'm so glad to have you back.
Thank you, Emily. It's always wonderful to hear your voice and to be able to share with you and your listeners.
Now, did it just? I wasn't actually expecting to go right to the meat, but I really am. It's very hard to watch, and I'm still keeping up with all the American stuff. But it's hard to watch from across the world because I'll be honest. Over here, we still help and love our neighbors, and so it's hard to see the divide has gotten, I think, out of control. But I'd love to hear what was going through your mind when I was saying all the things I was saying in that intro.
Well, I was nodding, of course, to much of it, and I do feel somewhat of perhaps a sadness around a lot of it because, you know, like you say, we used to love our neighbors or communicate with our neighbors. I still think we do when we consider someone a neighbor. But what happens with social media, and I think this is a lot of where you're seeing these things, is that it dehumanizes people and it makes it very easy to label another person. It's you're an anti-vaxxer or you're pro-vax, you're Democrat or you're Republican, you're a Christian, you're a Buddhist, whatever the label is and the identity is, we make people others, and it happens really, really easily online. So those same people, like you said, in an in-person conversation, it may be much different than the conversation that one has when they're on the keyboard. It could be at a traffic light, on their phone responding to someone, not present in any way, shape, or form, but feeling they have to react rather than respond to a comment. That reaction goes out there, it snowballs, more people jump on, that energy attracts more of the like energy to it, and that grows, and then of course the media, they're in business to make money. They're not in business to raise consciousness. They're not bringing about world peace. World conflict sells. Keeping people in an emotional state sells. So that is also the challenge. So what do we need to do? Maybe a media fast would help. Maybe a social media fast occasionally would also help. So
I think you're right. I think you're right. And it's interesting. I sat down today because I have not been blogging properly, because I started the blog My Malta Life, and I started blogging before we moved to Malta, and I kept up with it for a long time. And then I got kind of far away from it because blogging requires a regularity that I'm not used to, and also a Pollyanna-esque take on it. Because, when I sit down to write books, I'm really honest. But when you sit down to write a blog, they're just little blurbs. And they're, how are you going to sell yourself so people will want to buy your book or write more or read more? And I feel like I sat down today because I haven't written one in so long. And I've been doing, I'm a regular columnist now at Oh My Malta, and I'm writing all the time. And I thought that I would get on the blogs and talk about all these cockamamie schemes that I do to land these interviews with these local people that don't like to be on camera, and I've somehow finagled my way around, and I thought, oh, I'll go to the blog and I'll tell the story of how it all happened. But I haven't been able to do it, and today I sat down to blog because it's been months, and I started to write all these sort of negative things, and I kept deleting. And I found that what I personally am having an issue with, and this is different than most other people, but I know you can relate, is the pressure, the constant pressure to be a particular persona on social media and keep up with social media, because you're trying to be a social author and you want people to buy your books and read your stuff. And it doesn't mean that I sell out and I'm somebody else. But it means that there's other things that I think that I'm really resentful of, that I find not able to share, because people don't, they already hear all the negative from other people. They don't want to hear it from you. And so I've kind of started stepping back of like choosing what things to share and what things to keep, because the whole marketing game is difficult for me, and I'm very resentful of it, because if I wanted to learn marketing, I would have gone to school for marketing, and I went to school for exercise science and wellness. I never went trying to figure out how to rock this thing on social media, which is why you and I talked offline that I now have a person that I've hired, because I don't like the game. And it is, in fact, a game, and I don't like it, because it all results in what's your numbers. Nothing else matters. What are your numbers? And that sucks. That just sucks. And so today, even, I sat down and I started to write, like, where has our kindness gone? Because I do see just people are mean as snakes out there. And it's people that I know. This isn't just random social media. It's people that I grew up with. It's people that I don't want to know how mad or how, I mean, I'm coming out of the South of the United States. So wow. You look back and go, wow, I didn't realize that you feel that way. And then I have to follow up and go, no, they were always those people. I'm the one who grew up and got out and changed. They're still the same people. They're exactly the same people I knew when I was a teenager. It's me who doesn't fit anymore. But I think that's hard when you realize that you're the one that doesn't fit now?
Well, it certainly is, and it's a narrow path, and it's the path less traveled. You know, you mentioned the Mastery Book, and, you know, my path and where I feel the greatest hope lies is within the path of self-mastery, the path of know thyself. Like Lao Tzu has left a gem with us, and he says, knowing others is knowledge, knowing yourself is wisdom. So I think we are in a time in history now where we are over burdened with information and knowledge to a degree, and we're starving for wisdom. And much of that wisdom is innate. It comes from us, but it doesn't come from us when we're in that highly charged, distracted state, reactive state. It comes from us when we find at least a semblance of inner peace and calm, when we can be directed from above and within rather than directed from what someone else immediately says to us, a headline we read, something that lands upon our ears that might trigger us. Rather, if we can stay in this place of receptive quiet, even at moments throughout the day, and we can reset ourselves, then it makes it so much easier. And to loop back about what you were saying about what to put into the world, and of course wanting to only put good into the world, but yet I believe what you're saying is there's so much other things to look at besides the obvious good. Having said that, I think, you know, you are a healer. You are the role of a healer. And I know it's very challenging to say, well, we have to have this many social media followers or my publisher wants this. But ultimately, your job is to take care of yourself first and foremost and then share from that authentic place within you. So when I watch your videos, I think they're beautiful. When you read about your book, when you share the story about the carrots and seeing the, you know, the character traumas in the body and then discovering the flower on the side of the road and pulling that up and what do you see there, you know, like the interconnectedness of it all, like that to me is your strength. And that to me seems, and that could only be my perception, pretty natural a share for you. So for me, when I see that, I say, that's Emily doing her thing. It doesn't seem forced. It seems helpful. And again, you know, your work with trauma, what we're dealing with now collectively, you, let's say we'll just single out the USA at this point, is trauma. And a lot of, as you know, unprocessed trauma and a lot of newer trauma based on the whole year, however long it's been with COVID. So, you know, the challenge for me is I understand the idea of there's certain things that, you know, sometimes you might even want to shake a person and say, oh, enough already or stop. But really it's the hug that person needs. It's the kindness that person needs. That can be challenging, of course, because some of the stuff is so toxic, you could say, that's coming out of them. But that's what's existing in them. So I try to always see past that, see the soul, see the higher self of that person, see the heart of that person, and then address that person from that perspective. And I try to see the soul of America and the heart of America and the higher self of America and try to continually view it from that position.
I love the way you think. I just opened up a random page in Mastery, your book, Living the Highest You. And I'm going to read the left page and the right page of what I'm looking at. And it's page 126 and 127. 126, a master will often ask himself, how may I be of greater service? And 127 is, a master will not view himself as a victim, for he knows that in doing so, he closes himself off to the higher lessons and deeper understanding that is available to him. How pertinent is that in this conversation, the victim mentality? Take me there, Glenn.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, the interesting thing is that I trust that you actually just opened randomly to that page. So then
I did.
Listener would have to say, if they've been following our conversation so far, and, of course, they don't know the rest of the book, but it's very varied. There's everything from talking about nature in the book. There's elements that address nutrition. So it's not a book that's purely about whether I'm a victim or not, so or whether or not how I can be of service. But you open to those pages that align exactly with what we've just been speaking about. So the first thing we have to address is, what is that that does that? What is that? Is that our soul? Is it spirit guiding us? Is it our own intuitive nature that sort of moves our hand to the exact page? These are big questions. I mean, to me, these are the questions that America and the whole world needs to be looking at, into the mystery of how life and the nature of reality works. So first of all, thank you for allowing yourself to be led to these pages. And secondly, when it says here on page 126, a master will often ask himself, how may I be of greater service? He's asking himself, how may I be of greater service? He's not saying, how should Bob so-and-so, Beth so-and-so. It's about him. So again, it's like when you and I post on social media, I see some people, and it's unbelievable, it seems, the amount of work that they'll go into a post. And I think to myself, boy, and when I say work, just the amount of detail or writing, and I'm saying, boy, I don't know if that's not me. You know, I put a picture of a rose up and say a few words, and that's generally what I share. But that's authentic to me, and that's me being of service in my own way in that moment, to use our social media thing. And when I mentioned you reading and from your book, that just seems such a beautiful service you're doing. Of course, writing the book is a beautiful service. Taking the time to be present to the material of the book is a beautiful service. So for me, getting back to this one passage of how may I be of greater service, every one of us can bring something to the world, but that something is often born out of quiet and inner knowing, and that quiet and inner knowing can come upon on us many ways. We can discover our life's purpose by walking on the beach, taking a long ride in the car, meditating, maybe a dance class, yoga, something that can just put us in touch or back in alignment with stillness, going for a walk, walking in nature. The next thing that you brought up is the following page. A master will not view himself as a victim, for he knows that in doing so, he closes himself off to the higher lessons and deeper understanding that is available to him. Well, yeah, that's of course, and that's a master. So for other people, they would say, oh my God, if you knew how intense my life was, or what happened to me, or what happened to me, let's say, as a child, you could never say that I can't view myself as a victim. And to me, I would grant them that, and I would say, fair enough, but we're talking about the path of a master, and the path of a master has to do with healing trauma, coming back into alignment with your soul, which is beyond all the physical things, and really walking from a place in the now. And in the now, you can be healed and whole from your past. And these things that happen to us that we perceive as victimhood or that are challenging us, we can then see them as life lessons. And we can grow from those lessons, not only as an individual walking our own path, but as a teacher helping others walk their path.
You know, I think, first of all, that's beautiful. And I think that we really, I know that it's the underlying of all the spiritual practice, but I also think it's the hardest to grasp, and that is that fully present in the now. That nothing else, like that, what if we took away the identifiers that we've put around ourselves? What if we took all of those away and just became what is right now? And not label and not put that thing around it. And I feel like that's a grapple that people have. They grapple with that concept because it's so incredibly simple that we miss it. Because it's only in this space. And then it's only in the next space. And only in the next space. And time is always moving. So the now is never a static space.
Yeah, it's very true. And I've had people in the past say to me things like, well, I don't know my next plan. I don't know where my future is. I don't know my destiny. I don't know my passion. So what I tend to often say is, can you feel anything right now? It could be very small. It could be as simple as I want to draw a picture. I feel like I should call my grandmother. I want to take a walk. I want to revisit a newspaper article that I saw 6 months ago. Sometimes just doing those things in the moment, in that sense, lead to the next moment. And like you say, each moment is then a new moment, but they build on one another. So for me, it's like, living that authentic nature, that authentic self, you can in each moment. And for all of us, it's differently. Like some people might say, I just want to spontaneously get out of this chair and move. And in doing so, they might realize that they passed a flyer to a dance class. And then they go and check out the dance class. They may end up meeting their husband in that dance class. All that came because they spontaneously felt in their soul or their spirit or being that they want to get up and move one day. In doing so, it led to the flyer leads to the dance class leads to the potential husband, mate, or whatever that destiny is. But those moments built on one another, but they started from one authentic, listened moment. So I think if we can make, I know that if we can make time throughout our days to listen and follow our inner prompts, right, our inner prompts, and I also understand the challenges you yourself have children, responsibilities, you're an author, you're a healer, you're blogging, you're doing this special now in Malta. But still within that, Emily, is these moments or are these moments where we can just say, who am I now? What do I need now? Where am I going now? You know, just these check-in moments throughout the day. And for many people, as you know, this is so new to them. The idea of a path of self-mastery or self-knowing is a very rare path, it has taught in America, which is a challenge in the USA, because really the only way out is in. We're not taught that.
Wow. That one's so big. I hope you have that written. The only way out is in. That is a nugget of wisdom that if it's not already written, you need to write it. That is massive. Massive. The only way out is in.
It's a
All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break.
Yep.
So we're going to pick up right from there because I'm going to tell you how I stop in the day and the night also. So we're going to take a quick commercial break. We're on with Glenn Birkenkamp, and you are listening to All About Healing. We'll be right back.
Emily A. Francis offers you a unique approach to healing that works directly within the memory systems of your body. Healing Ourselves Whole is a groundbreaking interactive book containing everything you need to clean your emotional house from top to bottom, including journal prompts and audio meditations, all to help you dig deep into your past, change the dialogue, and let go of the pain and trauma to have a joyful and fully empowered life. Find out more at EmilyAFrancisBooks.com and buy Healing Ourselves Whole at Amazon.com now.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing, Create Your Own Path to Physical, Emotional, Energetic, and Spiritual Wellness can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
You may never totally understand this man-woman emotional connection thing, but now you can understand your muscles' emotional connection in regards to your health. That's right, your muscles have an emotional connection. And if you want an easy-to-use blueprint to understand your muscles' emotion, then get Emily A. Francis's book, The Body Heals Itself. It helps you activate and heal your muscles on an emotional level. So indeed, the body heals itself. Plus, it's filled with tools you can use immediately. Find out more at EmilyAFrancisBooks.com. Buy The Body Heals Itself now.
When you need a positive point of view, turn to HealthyLife.net, your 24/7 radio network for a better future.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to All About Healing. I hope you are getting a good taste of something fabulous as we talk to Glenn Birkenkamp. He is such a wonderful, beautiful, radiant soul. My gosh, I hope you can feel his energy like I can over in Malta, because he is radiant. But he is the author of the book Mastery, Living the Highest You. He's also written the book Walking with Glenn Birkenkamp. And he's got another book out called, this one I don't have in my hand, so hang on, it's What Would My, wait a minute, I have to be able to tell you properly. Glenn, tell me the properly.
Would my heart think this thought?
Would my heart think this thought? Okay, so I want to go into that for just a second. But first I want to tell you, you just said before the break that I do have a ton going on and I do have young children. But the other night, this made me so happy. So my children are now 7 and 9. And my youngest is a nature kid. She's outside in the garden like all the time. But both of my children know that now we've gotten into a new habit where Daddy lays down with them, and they get about an hour at night with my husband and not me anymore. Because when it gets dark and the moon and stars come out, Mommy goes outside to commune. That is my sacred time. Because where we live here, the stars, it honestly looks like you're sitting in a fake planetarium. But
wow.
It's my home. It is so stunning that I need to be outside and sit and talk and pray and listen and receive. And it was one of those great things because lately my 7-year-old has been wanting to join me. And so she'll catch me kind of on the way in and go, Mommy, have you been outside with the moon yet? Can I come with you?
Mm-hmm.
And the other day this happened, and I had just finished with the long meditation, and I said, yeah, let's go back out. Like, it was so cool to be able to teach and me not say, hey, darling, I want to teach you. Instead, it was, I'm teaching by example, and now you're jumping in. And in that same week, my 9-year-old did a 90-minute yoga practice, just me and her. And then a couple of days later, my 7-year-old is asking to come sit out under the moon with me and just kind of learn a little bit. We did some breathing. We did a little Tai Chi. We did a little talking. And it's one of those things that they're getting into an age where my practices are finally making a difference, but I'm not putting them onto them. I'm not saying, do you guys want to learn meditation? Do you guys want to learn these things? Instead, it's this new thing, and it's been really amazing. So I am busy, you know, and I'm actually really, really, my mom's here visiting, and she's shocked, and it's even in the summer right now. We start school next week, and my mom was like, I just can't believe how busy you are. You know, and I said, Mom, this isn't even during the school year. I mean, honestly, I don't really talk about, I am so busy. But I always make time, always, for God, for me and God, for us. And one more thing before we jump back in, we have a new school tutor that works with my girls because they both had to skip a grade, so we used our summer wisely. And I didn't realize she was still in the driveway and watching me, and I was in my garden, and we have these new wildflowers that have come out, and they're just stunning. And I walked over and I was rubbing them and I was talking to them. Oh, look how beautiful you are. You're blooming flowers. And she stopped and she said, oh my goodness, you're so cute. You're talking to your flowers. And I didn't even realize that this might be something that someone would, I don't know, want to watch, or how much more vocal I've gotten now that I grow orange trees and lemon trees and tangerines and wildflowers and things that I've never been around before. And now I'm becoming much more interactive with my beauties out there. So, you know, you can find bliss strategies anywhere you are if that's the choice that you want to make. So I opened another page, and I want to talk about it because we were just on the subject. I'm on page 180 and 181. So 180 says, a master knows and will teach that pointing fingers is often most effective when looking in the mirror. And 181 says, a master learns from his pain.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, well, two passages that are very true. You know, the pointing fingers one is very interesting. And, you know, more often than not, when we point out something in others, there's elements of it, however small or large, that exists within ourselves or around ourselves that we could perhaps benefit from looking at, taking stock of our own self before we point fingers at others, especially condemning fingers, judgmental fingers. rather than fingers that help elevate and lead and say, yeah, that's that, but let's try it this way maybe. And as far as a master learns from his pain, oh, that's so true. I mean, you're a healer, and you are a body worker, an intuitive body worker. So you are so familiar with the pain signals of the body, and that's the physical body tied to the emotional body and the spiritual body. But then also just the pain of our daily life, what we can learn from it. And it's interesting, like you mentioned, you know, God and praying to God. And if we were to say that there's a creator and we'll call that creator God, how amazing that we've been giving this entire system, you used the word bliss earlier, this system that feels bliss and can express bliss, system that feels pain and can express pain. And then, as it says here, that can learn from his pain. And it's such a specific path, you know. And many people, for whatever reason, will live in pain for a long time in a lifetime. And some people will have bouts of it. Some people may have continual pain, physical pain, through childhood. And then in adulthood, they'll say, boy, did I learn so much. I learned compassion. I learned empathy. I learned all these things. And so pain is an incredible teacher, and, you know, of course, we don't want to see anyone in pain. I don't want to see anyone in pain. Even if I could say, oh, it's their life lesson, you still want to aid anyone that's hurting. I mean, that's the first thing we want to do, but we can see the lessons there, and we can often see it clearer in others around us than we can in our own selves. But a master, the first thing he'll know is that he can learn from this pain, whatever the pain he's currently feeling.
Do you find that people don't even know they're in pain until it's so far into them? Like it, what, you know, a master can learn from his pain, but when does the master even realize the pain is there at all?
Well, the master would see it pretty quick, I would imagine. The unless the master had blind spots, which is not impossible, of course, and of course there's many levels of mastery and self-mastery and many, many parts being peeled back of the onion, you could say, or of the spirit. But I'd say, yeah, most people are in pain in one way or another, and a lot of people, you know, you could take a toothache, right? So people are aware of that. It might be a little throbbing bit of pain, and then one night it just becomes an explosive pain, and they say, okay, that needs to be taken care of now or first thing in the morning, right? So that's the obvious pain. The other pain is, let's say someone has a habit in which they walk, and it puts their knee in a slight disadvantage of how it should optimally function, and all of a sudden they have this knee pain. But they then think this is normal, or they think it's normal aging. They say, well, I'm 55 now. I should have this knee pain. And so the question is then, you know, what do they do with the pain? So you could use the word self-esteem, perhaps, in some of these things. And some people feel they might even deserve pain, as sadly as that sounds. I'm sure you've encountered people who feel they don't deserve to be perfectly healthy or to feel well or to feel blissful, and that's, you know, that can be a sad reality for people. So I think most people know they're in pain on some level. Whether or not they'll embrace it, try to heal it, or try to understand it is another thing. But I think on most people know when they're in pain, but they may also try to numb it out with substances or with media or whatever relationships that can take them away from that pain, and rather than going into it and seeing what it's truly about. And I'm so thankful that there are healers in this world and therapists in this world that have signed up in this lifetime to help people not only discover their pain, but heal it and release it.
I love that. I want to read you, I'm reading this to everybody who's listening, based on your book, Would My Heart Think This Thought? I want to read a quick, I posted this on Facebook last week, and it's originally by Teresa Adkins is who posted it originally. And I want to preface with, this could happen at schools in Malta, but not so much these days in America, but this is the story. I had a middle school student who was just coming unraveled in every way today. He walked up to me and said, today just isn't so good. I sighed, looked at him in the eye, and said, can I give you a 1-minute hug? He shrugged and said, I guess. I said, you have to commit for the whole minute. Can you do that? He said, I guess. So the hug began. At 20 seconds, I always watch the clock, he whispered, why 1 minute? I whispered back, so my heart can talk to yours. By 30 seconds, his squeeze tightened, and by 45 seconds, his head was on my shoulder. At 60 seconds, I said, you made it. He didn't move. 10 more seconds passed, and I said, it's time. He said, thanks for talking to my heart, looked me in the eye, and half smiled. Who knows what tomorrow will bring, but today that child was loved, if only for 70 seconds. Love them all, period. Mm-hmm. And I love the idea that we're holding. When I give people hugs in person, I do both directions. So I do what's called a heart-to-heart hug, where my head goes on both sides of their face so that my heart can fully engage with your heart when we hug. And I, when I read that story, it made me like, that's the kind of hugs I love. It's the kind where our hearts get to have a conversation. And then you have a book called What My Heart Thinks Is Thought. So I want you to go into the background of this book and why people would want to go run and get a book like this right now.
Well, the good thing is they can run and it'll be free. So it's just being this one. It's always been a free ebook, but now I'm having it printed into a booklet, and it'll be free on my website. So
wow,
that's a nice thing. Yeah. So first of all, that story you just shared is so beautiful, and a friend of mine just posted recently on Facebook a video of a teacher. Before each kid would go into the room, they would have a little hug and a connection time, and it was so beautiful, and it just showed A, the importance of such things and how these kids lit up, and B, perhaps what you could view as a sadness now that's even pre-COVID that has sort of been stripped away, you know, in this here in the USA, which is a little bit sad, but and again, granted, not all teachers would feel comfortable with that. Perhaps not all children would feel comfortable with that, which all this has to be taken into consideration. But the power, the affirming power of sharing love like that with a child is so powerful. And I guess what we were touching on is that you see less of that now. Even pre-COVID, you see less of that because I think as a society here in the USA, people are very nervous about hugging and children and these things, which is very sad, very, very sad. Children are seeds that need to be watered and seeds that need to have sunshine on them. And a hug from a teacher, a pat on the back from a teacher, this is so important in my view. So back to the heart book. This, you mentioned earlier about social media and this idea of keeping up or doing the right things, and prior to the launch of Living the Highest You, I believe this in 2016, someone that was designing the site, helping with the site, says, well, you need to have something so you can get their email address. They give them something for free, and then you sort of hook them, and then they come back for more. And I said, well, I like this idea of giving something for free, but I wasn't too into the hook them aspect of it. Three or four days after that, this little book came to mind called Would My Heart Think This Thought? And it came to me at a traffic light. And by the time I got back to my house, maybe 5 minutes later, I pretty much had written the whole thing in my head. And so I said, this is what I want to give away. And it just became this simple little book that helps us take the 18-inch journey from the head to the heart by reframing certain maybe head-based passages with heart-based one. And so if I open randomly, it says here on this page, it says, the head says, you can celebrate and enjoy life when you've reached your goal. The heart says, you can celebrate and enjoy life right now in this moment. Trust the heart. So it's a book that helps us take these common everyday thoughts that may be either holding us back, placing judgment on ourselves or others, and reframes them with how the heart would express to us. And so it's a useful tool, and I love giving it away. I've just recorded it as an audio book, so that'll be available soon. So it's, yeah,
that's,
I think
so
the heart
great.
Thank you. Yeah, the heart center is important, Emily, and we are, as a nation, we are so in our heads now, like I said earlier, just swimming in a sea of information, of over-information, and whatever we can do to get into that heart center, that heart wisdom, that heart knowing is so important.
You know, the Native Americans use animals as their message and their medicine. And the medicine of the mind is the coyote, the medicine of the trickster. Since it loves to be animated and create false narratives, and they think it's hilarious. It's the coyote medicine. But the medicine of the heart is the eagle. And they soar higher than any other animal on the planet because they have the greatest, simplest, truest perspective. And the eagle and the heart medicine whispers, and the mind medicine screams. So it's hard. You have to go underneath the volume and go into the place from the eagle where you can see from high above and then listen to that wisdom. Because, you know, and I actually was just writing about this recently, because I think a lot of times, even when we talk about finding passion or pursuing a passion, people run to the end game. You know, people, I have met so many people, I'm sure you have too, that talk about writing a book, but they immediately think they're going to become so uber famous overnight, like J.K. Rowling, like, oh, I really want to write the book, but I don't know about, you know, all the people that will know me after that and, you know, being on the bestseller. And I think, God, go for the bleacher. I mean, you know, hit it out of the park. You know, it does happen to some people. It certainly can. But do not let that be what holds you back or pushes you forward, because the joy is in the creating.
Yeah.
I love writing books because I love writing books. It's why I'm resentful of the marketing that you have to do after. I just want to write the books. I want somebody else to do all the marketing because I just love the process of being in that zone that I feel I'm delivering messages with spirit for the purpose of hoping to make a difference, or because I shouldn't be imparted this beautiful wisdom in vain and keep it to myself when I know that it wasn't just meant for me. And so that's a hard place. It's a hard place to kind of find your rhythm, but we can't be looking so far ahead that we miss the joy of just playing and listening to our heart wisdom and what wakes our heart up, what makes us feel happy, because that's what we need to be doing more of. Now more than ever in the world. I mean, how much has this earth been trying to shake us up?
Yeah.
You know? All right, read me another one from Would My Heart Think This Thought.
Okay, let's see. Okay, it says, the head says, there's a time for love and a time for all else. The heart says, all time is time for love. Trust the heart.
I love how simple these are.
Yeah, it's just each page is that. You can open to any page, similar to the mastery book, and just very, and the booklet will fit in someone's purse easily. It's been something I've been wanting to do for a while, and then I just reached out to a printer and said, yeah, I can make them, and my designer put together a beautiful little booklet, and so it should be available in probably the next 3 weeks on my website, so. Yeah, it's very exciting to give things out like this. You never know where they end up in the world and where they lead people. And I do think these little hits of information, these little encapsulated passages, are very potent for people in a time when they are generally overwhelmed with large groupings of information. And so I think these little things that they can pause and take in, like a candy drop for their soul, you know, is really nice to be able to share. So I'm happy about
these. These could also be little cards that you put in your wallet that you pick for the day. The little cards that you kind of pull from a bowl. There's one booklet of angel cards. I have a ton of angel cards, but there's one in particular that they're small, and I use them all the time because they're so simple and so loving, and it just is a good simple reminder to help set my mind. It's the simple things. It's the simple things that are really easy to add in, that all it takes is just the thought that I'm going to add this in. It doesn't take a lot of extra time. It's not creating a whole new practice. So I want everybody to think about that and be open to that concept. I used to have I call him my gem teacher. He was like a wizard. Sometimes I wonder if he was real at all. He was the most amazing man, and he was my crystal teacher. He taught me all about stones, and he would sell the most stones on all of eBay. So I would go to his house, and we would, like, sit on buckets of stones and see if we could feel the different energy of what they were before he told me, and he taught me for years, and it was funny because he really was like a real-life wizard. And I would go to his house that was 30 minutes off the highway and had no reception, and my mom was always like, you're going to some old man's house to play in his basement and no one can get a hold of you? You don't find that dangerous? I'm like, no. And like when my dog was sick and I called him and I didn't have enough money, and he said, write these numbers down. And I wrote him down. He goes, that's my credit card. Do whatever you need to. Save your dog. Bring him here. I'll see you in 2 hours. Get him here. You know, he was just incredible, and I miss him. Beautiful. I miss him every day. But he was the kindest person I've ever met in real life, and he always carried pockets full of stones, and he would hand them out everywhere he went. And over the years, being around him really taught me the value of kindness in a way that no one could have ever described. It was watching and learning and becoming. And there was a woman at the post office one day. I was mailing a bunch of stones myself, and she said, oh, my mother always loved rose quartz, and she passed away, and every time I see them, I think of her. And the next day I went to the post office to bring her a pair of earrings and a bracelet, rose quartz. Yeah. And we became really good friends after that, and it was just very sweet and lovely, because you don't realize the value of kindness until you see it in action. But I want to give you the floor, Glenn, and take the subject of kindness wherever you want it to go, so that people that are listening get your proper message as well.
Well, thank you, and thank you for sharing those genuine stories of you sharing kindness with another and another sharing kindness with you. Certainly the world needs more of it. To loop back to earlier in the conversation, you mentioned what's happening in the world, predominantly in the USA, with polarizing views on topics, highly charged topics. And so what is missing there, I would say pretty much across the board, is this level of kindness and the kindness of knowing that people are generally speaking, doing the best they can with who they are and how they've been raised and the imprints that have been placed upon them throughout their life, emotional imprints, psychic mental imprints, the information that they've gotten through their education and through their family and how they live. And so that's what they know is who they are. Who they are is what they know. And to expect them to be other than that is a challenging thing. So being kind and accepting is a very powerful, powerful thing, because that kindness and that acceptance also is a way in. If one is going to help another change, it doesn't happen by judging that person or by ridiculing that person or by belittling that person. It happens from meeting them where they're at and from your heart and doing so with kindness. And that kindness and understanding, one could say it doesn't always work, and that could be certainly true, but it's never not worth the effort. And it's not effort. Once you become generally kind yourself, it's easier to become kind to others. And this idea of being kind to ourselves is step number one. So if we can each look within ourselves and saying, where am I being a little too harsh on myself? Where am I being too judgmental towards myself? Where do I have elements of myself that I just refuse to accept, or that I anger myself over? Where can I bring kindness there? And the more we bring kindness and love to ourselves and self-compassion, the more we can bring kindness and love and self-compassion to others. And this is the most important thing that's happening, in my view, in this country right now, is the inability to get to know ourselves better and therefore to see others through a clearer lens and not just our very small lens. And Mr. Rogers' son, he used to talk to him about things at some point when he was very successful, and he would drive these older cars, and his son would say, you know, why don't we do anything fancy, Dad? Like, you know, let's get fancy. And he said to his son, he goes, we're fancy on the inside. And he said, always try to be fancy on the inside. So if I had to leave anyone with any words, I would leave them with Fred Rogers' words of try to be fancy on the inside. And that starts first and foremost by loving yourself, having compassion for yourself, having kindness to yourself. And then it starts to ripple out to others. And then your relationships will change, not only with those closest to you, but your relationship will change to the world around you, and your relationship will change to the world within you. And that's gold. That is the true gold of life. When you can find an inner peace and an inner self-acceptance within you and then share it with others, there is nothing greater that you can do for this planet.
That is the leave the world better than you found it. Leave everything better than you found it. And you know, I've never, you know, it's an easy thing to say, but the first time I ever saw those words was inside the bathroom stall at the yoga ashram that I was living in. And it said, leave everything better than how you found it.
Yeah, beautiful.
And my karma yoga was to clean the bathroom. So I looked at that sign a lot. But it's so true. Like, it's not just leave this better than when you found it. Leave the kitchen better than you found it. Leave everything better than when you found it. That is what we're here to do. Mm. We're borrowing the world. The children, we're borrowing the world from our children and from our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren, and we're not doing a great job borrowing it well. You know, and I have to say, it's very shocking now that I do live in Malta, because I have met more harvest farmers, growers, lifelong farmers that have been doing this that learned from their father and their father's father and so on. And there is zero question about climate change over here. Zero.
Yeah.
Because all of the harvests are now at a different time of the year. Fig trees are dying all over this country. The times and that things are ripe and the seasons have changed. So nobody here is going, that's a hoax. That's crap. So when I'm still back at home and listening to people go, that's a hoax, you really think it's climate change? And it's like, oh, my gosh, wow, but you don't, if you really are only being trained to hear what you have always been trained to hear, you really don't know. But then you come to a place like this where the world is about seasonal farming, and there is zero question that things like this are happening in the world because we're being directly affected by it. To leave the world better than you found it. We owe it to our children. Glenn, I love having you on. I can't wait to have you back on. You guys have been listening to All About Healing. Make it a great week.